Today's show is proudly sponsored by Minding the Gap. You guys all know that mental health for dancers matters. You're on board. You want to see the culture in your studio change, but where do you start? Enter Minding the Gap. Minding the Gap is dedicated to seeing mental health regarded with the same seriousness as physical health and dance culture, and they come armed with solutions. Whether it's helping you craft policies and procedures that protect the mental wellness of dancers and staff, consulting to build a robust mental health program in your school or company, or providing mental health skills workshops for your students and teachers, Minding the Gap has you covered. They bring the expertise of the best dance mental health experts in the world to you. For more information, visit www.wearemindingthegap.org or click the link in our show notes. Hello, hello, dancers. I hope that you all had a great 2 weeks since the last time you heard from me. Many of you I know are currently waltzing and flurrying and nutcrackering your way through November. Whether you're a fan or totally over it, which I can understand both, I want to wish you all a safe and productive winter season. I wanted to give you all a little life update. I know I've said on the pod a million times plus one, and I say it in this episode a couple of times more, that I'm not a parent yet. But my husband and I have always wanted kids. We love kids. And after about a year of trying, we decided to get some help from science. My body wasn't cooperating. I have a long history of disordered eating and some other health concerns. So we decided, let's give science a try. So we ended up going through about a year and a half of IVF treatments. I know some of you out there who have children who might have gone through some similar situations know that it's really, really tough, both emotionally and physically, not to mention the horror that just goes through your body with all of the drugs and everything. However, on a happy note, this past holiday weekend, we were able to happily announce that we are expecting a baby girl in June. Man, it hasn't totally sunk in, and every time I say it, I get goosebumps all over again. But I wanted to share it with you. Even though I've known for 12 weeks, it's just hard to believe that it's actually finally happening. But I wanted to share it all with you because I thought you would love to hear the life update, and I'm just so bursting with joy that it's difficult to hold back from telling everyone I know, including you guys. It is really ironic that today's episode is actually all about parenting. Parenting a pre-professional ballet student has its own unique challenges, family dynamics, and ups and downs. I was so thrilled to sit down with the one and only Jennifer Milner to talk it all through. Jennifer is a ballet coach and Pilates trainer specializing in dancers. After a successful dancing career, she got certified in Pilates and mentored under Marika Molnar for dance medicine. She's trained dancers from the Royal Ballet, NYCB, ABT, San Francisco Ballet, Kirov Ballet, and many more. Jennifer is passionate about shaping healthy dancers both physically and emotionally. Not only has Jennifer accomplished so much in the ballet world, but she's also a ballet mom. We spoke about the challenges kids face today, what choices she and her family have made, and how she helps her students and their parents navigate those challenges. She even gives some genius suggestions on how to have those uncomfortable conversations with your artistic director or teacher when you feel like something isn't quite right. Whether you're a parent, student, teacher, or professional dancer, this episode has something for everyone, and I'm so excited to share it with you. Before we get started, just a quick reminder that no one on the show today are mental health professionals, and anything you hear us say are observations from our own lives. None of that should be considered medical advice. If any of the things we share resonate with you, I encourage you to talk to your doctor or click the link in the show notes to find the best healthcare professional for you. Also, anything said on this podcast is a reflection of my dance experience as a whole and not any one teacher, studio, or company. The opinions shared by my guests in this episode are their own and come from their individual viewpoint. This conversation gives me so much hope and some actionable steps that I can actually use in my own life, even though I'm not a dancer anymore. And I really found it super useful, and I took tons of notes, and I hope you enjoy it. Here you go. Hello, hello, Dancers. Welcome back. And today I'm so excited to have Jennifer Milner on the show. She's a dancer, a parent, a coach. You may all know her from her amazing Instagram account, but welcome, Jennifer, to the show.
Thank you very much. It's so great to be here and to be able to share this conversation with you.
Yeah, I'm so excited. So I'd love to hear a brief overview of your relationship with ballet, what that looked like over the years, and if you'd like to share any details about what role your mental health has played throughout that time. And then also how you became to be a ballet coach, a Pilates instructor, and a ballet mom.
So I danced ballet through high school pre-professionally. And then moving through that same time period, I was an apprentice with a major ballet company and then a freelance ballet dancer. And then I moved into musical theater and really enjoyed that genre and was dancing with that sort of the same time that I was doing ballet. I had a very successful career in that. I was Meg Giry in Phantom of the Opera for a couple of years and loved my career, loved what I was doing. And then an injury, you know, typical story, sidelined me. And I wasn't able to really come back from that injury. And while I was dancing, I had been taking Pilates and using that as a way to continue dancing and stay strong. So I became certified to teach Pilates as sort of a new career. And I spent several years working for Westside Dance Physical Therapy, which is the physical therapy clinic for New York City Ballet. So while I was there, I got to train dancers from New York City Ballet, Royal Ballet, Kirov, San Francisco, American Ballet Theater, you know, any big company. I was able to work with them. But I was also able to work with pre-professional dancers because of School of American Ballet and JKO and different schools in the area. So I really got to start working one-on-one with these dancers, and it gave me a chance to talk with them and to, they would sort of process what they were going through as we were doing our work, which is, you know, a great place to process while you're sort of doing other things. Yeah. And I found that I really loved what I was doing. A lot of times it was recovering from an injury that we would be doing our work. And so there was sort of that factor added into it. And then I had two daughters and moved back to Texas. And when we moved back to Texas, I started working in Dallas. And so the dancers I work with now are mostly pre-professional. There's not as big of a professional scene here in Dallas, but I work with professional dancers across the world, mostly through Zoom. And then a lot of pre-professionals and some professionals in the Dallas area as well. And then both of my daughters chose to go into dance. So they are both in there. You know, I was nervous letting them step into it, but I have been kind of with them the whole way. And then the mental health journey, of course, it's really hard to extract yourself from dance and from selling your art, right? It's hard to separate yourself from that art form. So I think there's always been a struggle in dance for me with the mental health aspect of it, most notably that sense of identity. But of course, also weight is a huge issue. I danced as a young teenager in the late 80s and early 90s, and weight was not something that you didn't talk about, right? Now, nowadays, at least we pretend that it's healthy and we pretend that we're not talking about it and that it doesn't matter. But it definitely did matter back then. And I remember when I was 12, dancing for a local pre-professional company, and a guest choreographer came in and they were casting their dance, and it was a pas de trois. It was two girls and one guy. And they said to everybody in the company, how much do you weigh, to each person, like, you know, in the room, went through the room. And apparently as the 12-year-old in a room full of 15 and 16-year-olds, I weighed the least. Shocking, right? Because I'm also short. And so I got cast. And after I got cast, they said, you know, there's this major lift in it. And that's why we cared about the weight. So you're not allowed to gain any weight during all of this. And I was like, okay. There was zero dancing for that audition. And so And so that's the point at which I learned it's more important to weigh a certain amount than to be able to dance a certain way. And, you know, that kind of just laid the foundation for the whole thing. So it was definitely a struggle and an issue through my whole career. And then, of course, retiring from a knee injury and not because I chose to retire was hard. So I sort of had to process through my whole sense of identity being wrapped up as a dancer. I got help for it. I saw a counselor and worked through it, and was really fortunate to have that help available to me and came out of it a stronger and better person on the other side. But it really made me think, yeah, there's more to this. And we want to make sure that dancers don't hit that point, that dancers are healthy their whole career and not something that has to be fixed at the end of their career.
Oh, what a wonderful story. Thank you for sharing that. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I know that. I know those stories aren't always easy to tell. So I really do appreciate that, because I think, you know, the more stories we hear from our peers and from our, you know, people who are older than us, younger than us, it just, it makes everybody else feel like, okay, I'm normal.
Right, right. It's good to hear those stories. It's not just me. Yeah,
exactly. Like, this is not a good thing and it shouldn't be normal, but I am not abnormal.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. So what was that decision like, you know, when your daughters wanted to pursue dance more seriously? Was that kind of like a big conversation in the house? Like, was that difficult for you?
I think it's been an ongoing conversation. Because of course my husband has seen how the dance world affected me and wants to protect them from that. And it has always been cautious. So he's that really great objective outside voice. That's like, you know, that's not normal, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that's not okay.
Yeah,
which is great to have in the conversation. But I let them start dancing when they were very young, just for fun. And every step of the way, we've had conversations about it. One of my daughters quit when she was, I think, 8 or 9. And so many people said, oh, doesn't it break your heart that they quit? And I was like, no, I'd rather her quit now.
Yeah.
When she could still come back if she changed her mind and wanted to come back,
right,
than to be miserable till she's 16. Mm-hmm. And she did. She quit for a year and then she came back because she realized she loved it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been very open with them and said, you do not have to dance because of me. I will support whatever you want to do. But I also am sure to check in with them and have conversations, sort of mental health conversations, every step of the way. And I teach some at their studio, so I'm able to be a positive influence there as well.
That's great. I love that. I love that idea of the constant conversation. I think my mom probably checked in with me every 3 or 4 months or so. Like, are you still, is this still okay? Is this still what you want to do? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that's really important. So I've said this on the show 8.5 million times, but I am not currently a parent myself. and I would really love to hear about all the unique challenges that parents of pre-professional dancers are facing in 2021.
Well, let's talk about the unique challenges that dancers are facing in 2021, right?
Yeah.
Dancers, social media, something I never had to deal with. I didn't even have YouTube. So I was never, I think I was probably not nearly as good of a dancer as I thought I was at the time. but in my head, I felt a certain way about myself and I was able to keep going and I never had 6 million videos to watch to pick myself apart and be like, oh, that's terrible and that's terrible. Mm-hmm. So we have social media, we've got the constant visual feedback that's coming at dancers that's completely new. We have fame, you know, Insta-fame put on dancers at a younger and younger age. We have 9-year-olds who are looking up to and fan gushing over 12-year-olds. And these 12-year-olds feel that pressure to keep up their social media accounts and to post that next picture of their overarched foot and their hyper bow-legged knee and their, you know, long leg shirt, making sure to get the leg warmer and the point shoe for whatever ambassadorship they're doing into the picture, right? Mm-hmm. So they've got these ambassadorships and they've got these fan bases and they're just kids themselves.
Yeah.
And they're trying to figure out what they want to do in life and where they want to go with it. And also maintain their 7,000 followers, right? And that's really hard to do.
And also go to class and, you know, work hard and go to school and study and have friends, mm-hmm. you know, hopefully that maybe a few who aren't dancers, like
hopefully, right?
Hopefully. Yeah. It's a lot to manage.
It is. And finding that exact right sort of breezy note for your Instagram post while not feeling super breezy inside, maybe, but not mm-hmm. thinking that you can talk about that in your post. So I think pre-professional dancers face a lot more burnout today than they did in my day because they feel that intense pressure. And then of course there's competitions, most of which were not around when I was dancing either.
Me either.
And I've told my dancers, if I had to go to a major ballet competition when I was 13, and have judges write stuff about me and stand in the wings and watch, I don't think I could have handled it.
Yeah.
And the
only thing that comes close to that was like Nutcracker auditions every year.
Right.
That's right? all we had to deal with. Maybe summer program, but not until I was maybe 14, 15. So.
Well, and that happens as well. I remember as I was dancing, you would go away for the summer, maybe when you were 14, right? Mm-hmm. As you said, 14, 15, 14 was kind of the earliest that you would go away. And nowadays they're going away when they're 10, 11 years old, they're feeling mm-hmm. that pressure. So everything has really accelerated in the dance world. A lot of it because of social media and that instant access. And so I think that the dancers feel that pressure, which makes the parents feel that pressure because everything goes by so fast. As soon as you get them ready for one competition, there's another competition. And as soon as that competition's over, they've got to get ready for a summer intensive audition. And as soon as the summer intensive audition is over, they email you about it within like 5 days. And when I would audition for a summer intensive, it would be 2 months later.
Yeah,
you'd get a letter in the mail. Weeks.
Yeah, they would have to go through their tour and like go to all the cities and then... Yeah.
Write a letter, put
write
it in the
letter.
Mailbox.
Get a thick envelope.
Time, exactly. And by that time I was like, it's fine. Yeah. Either way, mm-hmm. it's fine. But mm-hmm. they still have it in their mind from 5 days ago. And so, so you go through this rapidly accelerated pace, which I think is incredibly difficult. So I think everything has been condensed and compressed and super sped up. And I think that's kind of what we're facing now versus before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So as a mom, how do you navigate that? How do you help them get some balance? How do you, shut it down after however many hours of screen time? Like, how do you manage that? And I want to say too, that like taking some pressure off of you, mm-hmm. you are not the parent of every dancer in the United States or any, So this is just one aspect of and one person's perspective on how to manage it, not the only one.
Right. So yes, I am not a mental health professional. Mm-hmm. I do not have a degree in that area. I just have experience in this area from being a coach and being a parent. And I would mm-hmm. say that my parental choices are not choices that every parent makes. I've chosen not to have my kids compete, because I know my kids and I don't think that the pressure that they would go through is worth what they would get out of it. And if I see other dancers as a coach who might be similar, I will say to them, well, what are you hoping to get out of your competition? What do you want from it? And if they're like, well, I just need more time. I just really want to work a variation. I'm like, that's great. Go hire someone, do privates and work a variation, but don't compete. Mm-hmm. If you don't want to, if that's not something that you need. So we've chosen not to compete. I'm not saying competitions are bad. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying there's not healthy ways to navigate the competitions. I just know with my kids, that's what we have chosen to do. And we also tried to choose a studio that is accepting of everyone, that firmly believes that every child has the right to dance and not just the ones with the banana feet and the long skinny legs, right? So that they're surrounded by a little more, hopefully, positivity. Mm-hmm. And we were really careful with Instagram, not allowing the girls to have it until they were 12, 13 years old, mm-hmm. and then really limiting how much time they spend on Instagram so they don't feel that pressure to maintain that account and to keep up and to put out more product and, all of that. So we've made choices that just have worked for our family. And like I said, as a parent, just constantly checking in with them and making sure they're exposed to to a world outside of dance as well. Not like, wouldn't you rather do this? But you want to go hang out with your friends from school? Absolutely. You want to be in the school show? Absolutely. Let's figure out a way to make that work just so that they feel like it's not all this or nothing, you know?
Yeah, I think that's really important. The all or nothing mindset is, as we all know, I mean, so prevalent in not just the ballet world, but the dance world in general, even, you know, for kids who are, you know, at a competition studio or, you know, training for commercial dance, like it's everywhere. And I think that piece is really important because, and the way that you present it also is really important because I think it, just reflecting back to when I was a teenager, if my parent had said, well, why don't you try this instead of that? Or why don't you also do that? Like I would have had very much a lot of resistance to that, but you know, just giving them the freedom to explore and be curious about what else is in the wide world and what's going on at school and, you know, things like that. I think that's so healthy and just giving them almost permission. I feel like I kind of almost feel like I needed permission to be like, can I skip rehearsal and like go have ice cream? You know, or maybe not skip rehearsal, but you know, can I make room in my life for these other people and these other things? So,
well, and
that's
we,
really powerful.
We do have space in our family life for them to skip rehearsal or skip class. Like we try to, you know, not do rehearsal, but if they're overwhelmed with schoolwork, my daughters are 14 and 16. They're both in high school. If they're overwhelmed with schoolwork, then I give them that permission to stay home from dance that night to get their schoolwork done because those purple smudges under their eyes are not going to go away, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think once I've had one of my daughters come to me and say, I need a mental health day. Can I please stay home from school? And I say, if you have the courage to come to me and say that, yes, absolutely. And I would much rather have that happen than them, you know, fake a stomach ache or pretend to be sick when it's okay to say, hey, I can't do this right now. I can't handle it. And then they work really hard when they are in the dance studio, but they are realizing that they have to take that time to themselves sometimes and step back and say, I have to do this schoolwork. I can't stay up till 4 o'clock in the morning to do it because that's not healthy. Yeah. So I'm just going to have to get it done. And when I'm in dance class tomorrow, I'm really going to be focused and I'm really going to move forward. So giving them space to feel comfortable coming to you and talking about those things, I think is really important and not making them feel scared to come to you and say, I'm so sorry, but I really need to miss dance because I've got a final and you know.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. I love hearing that. So you're also a coach. I'd love to hear a little bit about what that entails for you. Is it mostly coaching variations or general technique, utilizing your Pilates certification? How does that look? But also then knowing all these challenges that the kids are facing and that the parents are trying to navigate, what are some ways that you support your students having all that knowledge?
So what I do, so, you know, I'm a certified Pilates teacher. And then from the ballet side, I'll teach regular ballet classes, of course, and I'll do ballet privates. But the thing that I really excel at, I think, is taking something that already exists and making it better. And so I know I don't have the depth of experience. I have a lot of respect for the world-class ballet teachers out there that have this depth of knowledge of all the different variations. They're not just picking them up off of YouTube, but they've performed them and lived through them, you know. So I'm not thrilled to have to lay a variation on someone, but someone can come to me with a variation and say, I'm having trouble with this, this, and this. And I have a really good eye for seeing it, picking it apart and figuring out what's going on and maybe taking some Pilates or cross training exercises, bringing it in there and using that dance science to make it better. So I really like to walk hand in hand with their primary ballet teachers or ballet coaches. So I would never take someone to a ballet competition as their primary coach.
So you're
for
more
example,
a technician.
Right? Yes, exactly. Yeah, more of a technician. Cool. So in group classes, it can be a regular class, but one-on-one, that's sort of what I work with. And I love my job. I love having that freedom to have a dancer from, you know, a major ballet company say, oh, I just got Sugar Plum for the first time. Can we do a Zoom? I'm really concerned about this. And we can kind of work on that little thing. But having that role in a dancer's life of being that one-on-one person and sort of problem solving and being detectives together means that I have a chance to sort of talk into their life as well and give them that space to, like I said earlier, to process. And so I feel like a big part of my job is creating that safe place for dancers to process and to sort of figure things out, whether I'm giving them a safe place in the ballet studio where I don't tear them down and don't tell them how stupid they are, which sounds, you know,
sounds like a no-brainer,
right? It seems obvious, but or giving them a safe place in the Pilates studio as we're working and they're lying on the table and then they just start floating up conversations about how they feel about their body, you know? So a lot of it is just giving them that space to feel safe and to be able to talk about when they want to talk about. Giving them a place to try things on in a really non-judgmental way, like, I think I might want to change dance schools, or I'm not sure I want to keep dancing, or this thing happened in rehearsal and it made me uncomfortable and I can't figure out why. Mm-hmm. And just sort of that place where they process while they're working can be really fruitful for them. And I think because I have no skin in the game, like I'm not going to profit from them getting the Hope Award, you know, at a certain competition or anything, or if they get promoted or not promoted or change to a different school, it doesn't matter to me. Mm-hmm. And I think they feel that sense of she really is an objective person that we can sort of talk through with it, right? And then I also try to be honest with the dancers about the challenges that I went through and the things that I faced and let them know that I wasn't perfect and that my journey wasn't perfect. And pretending to be perfect is not going to be helpful in the long run. And so if they can see that I'm okay with my imperfections, maybe they'll be okay with their imperfections. Mm-hmm. And I also really, if it's pre-professionals, I encourage them and their parents, because there's a fair amount of conversations happening with the parents as well.
I want to hear all about that.
I encourage them to look at their career sort of for the long run. And so I will say to them, I don't want your career to peak when you're 14. I want your career to peak when you're 45. Mm-hmm. So if you feel a little injured and you can't make this one competition or this one nutcracker, it's okay. It's okay to sit that out. And it's okay to say there will be other nutcrackers. I'm 10 and there will be other nutcrackers.
The fraction of your life, of your career.
A fraction of your career. Yeah. So it's really helpful for them to start seeing that big picture, because as dancers, we're so focused on the next thing, get to the next audition, get to the next opening night, get to the next company hiring season, you know, and without being able to take a breath and say, what do I really want? What are my goals? And let's try to accomplish that, like the long-term big picture goals. So I feel like I could do a fair amount of that as well. And then I'm a huge believer in having an entire pit crew available to you. And I talk a lot about how dancers are like race cars and you need that whole pit crew. So helping my dancers see that they need a physical therapist and a massage therapist and an orthopedist and a sports psychologist and a nutritionist and sort of all of that. I have a ton of them in my phone book, you know, and I love calling them because I love saying, I don't know how to do this. Let's find someone who can do it. And
that referral. And sort
of, exactly. And sort of normalizing that, because if you're having trouble with the triple pirouette, you're going to call your ballet coach and work on it. And if you're having trouble with your performance anxiety, you're going to call your sports psychologist. No big deal. Same thing. So really helping them see that and helping the parents see that as well. And I will point blank say, let's skip a few weeks of working with me financially, if that makes the difference for her to get in to see a nutritionist or get in to see a sports psychologist. Like, let me help you prioritize if you're not sure where to put your energy and your money. So, so I think that that's also a big part of what I do as a coach, is to give them that space and to normalize asking for help to maintain what's a really fine instrument, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, that makes so much sense. I mean, if you think about Olympic athletes, you think about gymnasts, I mean, they travel to the Olympics with an entourage, you know, yeah. of doctors and healthcare professionals and mental health professionals and things like that. So I love this visual, this idea of a pit crew just sort of like coming in and, you know, tightening the screws and changing the tires and all of the things. I think that's a lovely analogy, because that's exactly what they need. Mm-hmm. I think reflecting back to my time dancing, I was pre-professional in the late 90s or early 2000s, professional early to mid 2000s. So I had a physical therapist. When I was dancing professionally, I also had a massage therapist and a coach. And I think that's it.
Which is still more than some people.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, it's so wonderful that like at this point in the dance world, like these things are becoming more normalized and mm-hmm. More accessible too. And that can be a really big challenge as well, is, mm-hmm. you know, are you in an area that has a sports psychologist who has any experience with a dancer, you know, and
right.
has that kind of shared cultural experience where they understand what you're talking about.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Yeah.
Well, and it also has gotten easier, of course, with Zoom, mm-hmm. That people can find people, even if they don't have those people really close to them. And my dancers who have gone on to have the best success are the ones who have started gathering that pit crew early, because just like mm-hmm. a car, they come in and they change their tires before they blow a tire.
Yes.
Right. If you're racing, if you're a Formula One racer and you blow a tire, you're probably out of the race. Mm-hmm. But if that's why they come crash. In and they get their little pit stops and their little tune-ups and all the tires are changed before they need it. So mm-hmm. I encourage my dancers to start working with that team before something big happens. So if you have mm-hmm. a little twinge, go see your physical therapist. Then they get to know you. And when you come back 6 months later, they're like, that's not how it was 6 months ago. What's yeah. going on? Let's talk
establish
about
it. Establish a relationship. Yeah. That's really yes. important.
Yes. Yeah. And establish that it's okay to go in and ask and say, I've got a twinge, or I need to work on this, or I've just been having a rough couple of weeks. I'd like to process through why that is, you know, no yeah. big deal. That's just your job. It's fine.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. So moving on to a topic I've spoken to many people about, and I think this is kind of a pretty popular ongoing discussion in the dance space, but I'd love to hear your take on it, both as a parent and as a dance professional. I'd love to encourage kids, adolescents, and adults at this point to be able to clearly communicate their needs, respectfully, mm-hmm. understanding that the hierarchy of the ballet is what it is right now and mm-hmm. probably won't change for a while. You know, those power dynamics and power structures, but how can we encourage people to communicate clearly and confidently and respectfully to their superiors?
Yeah, that's a great question. And there's not a lot of easy answers, because some of it is so circumstantial, right? So I encourage dancers to speak to their parents, and I'm assuming pre-professional, I'm assuming underage at this point, right? I encourage them to speak to their parents first, because as a parent myself, I feel like I have to walk that line of advocating for my kids and also raising them up to be independent and to be able to stand up for themselves. Yeah. But if I have to err on one side or the other, I'm going to err on keeping them safe and being their advocate, right? I mean, now that my 16-year-old is starting to look at colleges, like I've got to nudge her more towards independence. But but in general, I have to figure out how to walk that line. And I want, first of all, that the dancers feel comfortable talking to their parents about whatever it is that's going on with them. If there's something big happening in the studio, like physical or verbal abuse, then they will definitely need to process that with their parents. I absolutely do not believe that it's a child's job to have to confront their abuser and to have to go in and sit down and say, you know, to the studio owner having the teacher come in, I don't think that's appropriate, right? Mm-hmm, I think mm-hmm. the parents should stand in for them in that instance in the room. And I think that the parents should reach out to get some help on how to move forward if that's what's going on with them, so that they know how to address it with the teacher and with the studio owners. But if they're asking for help to talk to a teacher who just doesn't get them, right? Who's mm-hmm. having an issue with it for whatever reason, I hope that the older teens feel like this is a conversation they could be a part of with their superior, but also with their parents in the room.
Yes.
So that nobody's saying, well, this is what they said. That's not what they said. You know, yeah. Right. The parents mm-hmm. should always be in the room. But I would hope that there's a way that they could have that conversation in a respectful way. We might talk through how they could approach it, right? The dancers could process some of that with me saying, well, how do you feel like it would happen if you did this or if you did that? And what do you want to say? As a parent, I will encourage my child to be really clear on what they're asking for mm-hmm. and to know not just I'm hurting and I don't like it, but what are you asking for? What do you think should change? Because something should change if this is making yeah. you feel the way that it is, right? So we can practice ways of having a conversation that are not accusatory because that doesn't help, right?
Yeah.
So for example, completely hypothetically, maybe my child felt like a teacher just didn't see her or give her corrections that she could understand and that both sides were getting frustrated. So she might say to her parents, this is happening. The parents can ask for a sit down with the teacher and the child, you know, everybody's in the room. And then my daughter might say, I have so much respect for your teaching experience. And I know that I can learn a lot from you. When you give me a correction, I don't really understand it. And I can see that this frustrates you. So mm-hmm. what can I do differently in this situation? And can we talk through some of the corrections so I can see what you're looking for? So opening up a dialogue that's not all, you're a terrible teacher and I hate yeah. the way you talk, right?
Yeah.
But just saying, I know that there's got to be something good in here and let's mm-hmm. talk about it and help me see what I'm missing. And it's really hard because in the dance yeah. world, we are educated to be obedient and to not mm-hmm. ask questions and to assume that if something goes wrong, it's our fault. That's just drilled into us, but training dancers to stand up for themselves and to know their worth is super, super important, right? And also training parents to understand yes. that they can stand up for it too. And I have mm-hmm. so many parents who are completely unhappy with casting situations or scheduling situations and saying, this is just awful. It's not great. And I'm like, well, you could quit.
Mm-hmm.
Like you do have that option.
Yeah.
Oh no, I can't. And I'm like, well then if you're not quitting,
mm-hmm.
you're choosing unhappy. To stay there. Right. Mm-hmm. So you are, and that's okay. If you're choosing to stay there because you think the benefits outweigh the disadvantages, ignore the disadvantages, focus mm-hmm. on the benefits and stay there. But it's that weird balance of this, the teachers work for the parents, right? They work mm-hmm. for the students. And yet mm-hmm. we choose as parents to submit ourselves to that authority, to submit yeah. to the teachers and to submit to the owners. So we have to trust them. And yet at some point we have to protect our child. So figuring out when to do which one can yeah. be really hard, right? Yeah,
'cause you don't want to be that parent who's like, well, why didn't my kid get casted in this, you know, or just right. constantly emailing. 'Cause I, you know, as a teacher, I've been on the other side of things.
Oh my
too,
gosh. Yes.
Where you get, you know, the angry email and everyone's emotional and I don't just don't understand. And it's just, like you said before, it's just a matter of, you know, every person learns differently. Every person has their own unique form of communication and how they receive things. And like mm-hmm. you said, just opening that dialogue sometimes can make a really big difference because there could be a huge misunderstanding, you know, or,
right.
You know, there might be factors in the home that are affecting the child's ability to focus or, you know, on both sides, you never know what's going on. So I think that's so important to kind of open that door. And I love the way you describe the choice of words that you're using and using mm-hmm. I statements and not you statements.
Not
and,
you statements, exactly.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Very cool. And it's not going to be easy. I don't enjoy it, and I'm a grown up, you know, but it is important skill to learn and to know you're going in there supported by your parents, hopefully, right? That your parents agree with you as they're coming in there. It's very empowering. And as you said, I've been on the other side as a ballet teacher, as a coach, and I see it all the time with the parents. Well, why didn't my daughter get Clara? And how come this rehearsal was 5 minutes late? And how, you know, we're trying, right?
Yeah.
But being clear about what you want, being clear about what you expect out of the situation and being respectful will get you a really long way.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's probably one of the best answers that I've heard so far. So
Yay! I'm winning.
You're doing the thing. So kind of going in the same vein of that topic, I know that there are parents out there, and you kind of touched on it briefly, who they know in their heart, whether they themselves were dancers before or not, doesn't matter. They know that their kid is in a great program because, and great in the sense that it has produced, and I hate using this word because you're producing nothing, you're facilitating artists, not producing them.
Thank
but
you.
whose school has, you know, some professional training.
Graduated.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you. I can't talk today.
Okay.
So they know that the potential is there. For their kid, the potential is there for the school, but the learning environment is not the healthiest. And they also don't have very many options in their area. So how do we navigate that situation? What are some things you can think of that might be helpful?
So this is a really tough one. And I think my answer probably would have been different at different stages in my life. I'm sure there would have been points in my life where I would have said, you stay there. Are you kidding me? They're amazing. You know, nobody's better than ABC Academy. So why would you go anywhere else? Right. But that's definitely not how I feel now. When dancers come to work with me, they will ask for things that I'm not comfortable giving them, like hyperflexibility, pushing them beyond what I think they should be pushed physically, that sort of thing. And sometimes I have to tell them, I cannot make you the best dancer that you have the potential to be. I can't do it because there are some lines that I'm just not willing to cross. I'm not willing to verbally abuse you. I'm not willing to try to regulate your weight and tell you what to do. I'm not willing to push your body in unhealthy ways. So I can't help you become what society right now thinks is the best in quotation marks, possible version of yourself. I can help you become a better dancer, but that has to be tempered with striving to be a better human being. And I don't understand what the point is of creating a world-class ballerina if I've also created a shell of a person who can't function at the age of 30. So I'm not that person. And so I may lose clients because of that. And I'm okay with that. So I know some people will say, yes, this teacher is a bit harsh. Maybe they are a bit abusive, but they have such great results. They've got such a great track record.
Right.
Maybe I should keep my, I should definitely keep my kid there. I don't agree with that. But I respect that you're trying to make the best decision that you can for your child. And that is what you think that you need to do in the moment. But let's talk hypothetically again. Okay. Steps that I would take if I see the situation and we're in a limited area. First, I would assess the situation. What do I think is unhealthy? Do I think it's unhealthy? Does my daughter think it's unhealthy? I would want that conversation with my dancer, and I would want to say, do you agree with me that I think this is unhealthy? Is the dancer the one pushing for a change? Or is the dancer the one saying, please don't talk to them. Please don't change it. They'll be so angry. Please, 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 please don't try to do anything. Right. So that's where you have to start, is saying who's thinking about this. Secondly, I would say, look at your options. Is there really nowhere else that you can go? Are there no other local options? Worst case scenario, if that studio shuts down, what would you do? Right. If that studio shut completely for whatever reason, what would you do? I have dancers across the world who, for whatever reason, they might live in a small rural area. They might have parents who just can't drive them very far. So they might be dancing with a small studio that may not be able to push them as much as they need to be pushed. Mm-hmm. And thanks to Zoom, they may work once or twice a week doing private ballet lessons with a teacher that's super far away. And they might work once or twice a week or a month or something with me, sort of zinging their technique and doing their conditioning. So they are building the best possible scenario that they can with the tools that are out there. And we have more tools now than we used to. So I think it's really healthy to think, what would my plan B be, right? You have to have a plan B if in case the studio closes. And then I would say, figure out your risk aversion. how much are you willing to put up with and how much is too much? And sort of figure out what that line is being passed over for a role okay? Spoiler alert, yes, it is. It should be okay. is being bullied in class okay? Is being weighed and having your weight talked about okay? Hence, no, they are not okay. So you want to remember that this is a human being that's going to be shaped by these situations, and you want to figure out what is not okay for me. So we've talked with the dancer, we've looked at our plan Bs, we've come up with a plan B, we've figured out our risk aversion, and then decide, like we talked about earlier, what would you ask for with the studio if you were given the chance? What would you want to change? If you could sit down with that owner, would you ask for one of the teachers to be fired because you know they're abusive and you have evidence of it? Would you ask the owners to cut out diet references and cut a clause out of the contract for that? Would you ask for transparent casting? Like, what would you ask for in that situation? And then this is the hardest part, I think, is decide whether or not you're going to ask for that meeting.
Yeah.
Right? Because if a teacher is making you mad and you're still at the studio, well, then that's a choice. Like we said earlier, it's a choice for you to stay there. So if you choose to sit down with the studio and have that conversation, you have to walk into that room being willing to walk away from that studio. You have to go in there knowing, here's what I'm asking for, and here's what I think is worth it, my child, and here's what I'm okay with, here's what I'm not okay with. If something is wrong enough for you to go through this conversation, and you ask for it and they say no, and then you stay, what is that saying to your child?
Yes.
Right? So you have to go through those other steps, coming up with your plan B, figuring out your risk aversion, figuring out what you really want before you try to walk into that studio. But I think it's important to do that. And after you've had that hard conversation, hopefully the teacher will say, oh my gosh, this contract has been around for 30 years. I never realized the diet clause was in there. I'm so sorry. Mm-hmm. And it'll be over. And if it's not, well, then you've got plan B ready, right? Yeah. So I'm not saying it's easy. Mm-hmm. It's not easy. Yes. But here's the thing. My body is covered with scars. We all are, right? I have little scars from cat scratches and scraping my knee and falling down. And I can look at them and see them. And I kind of vaguely remember them, but I don't really remember where I got all of them from. Yeah. But every single scar on my heart, I remember where every single one of those scars came from. Mm. And those are going to be with me for the rest of my life. And I can go to counseling and I can heal from it and work through it and be a better person because of it. Mm-hmm. But I still remember what caused those scars much more emotionally than physically. And I wouldn't, just because I live with them now and something good came of it, doesn't mean I would wish them on my younger self.
Yeah.
Right. Oh. So I want parents to know that your child will absolutely remember every single time you show up for them. Every single time you stand up and advocate for them, they will remember that and they will put that in their heart and they will think, I'm worth standing up for. I'm worth advocating for. I am worth fighting for. And if this behavior from a person in authority was happening anywhere other than ballet, would it be okay? Would your school teacher, your Sunday school teacher, your next door neighbor, if they talked to your kid or treated your child like this, would that be okay?
Yeah.
Right? So that's a really long answer. I know.
Sorry. No, I am just sitting back and just nodding and nodding and nodding. Like, I know you can't see me, but That's very powerful. And I love how you broke out the plan into steps that are easy to comprehend, maybe not easy to actually do,
right?
But to say, okay, this is what I need to do. Let's see how this works. And what it really reminded me of is negotiating with HR, you know, as an adult having a job, whether it's for a pay raise or if you're uncomfortable with something that's happening at work. And I think going into these conversations with solutions to your problem is one of the best ways to present a problem to someone, you know, like instead of just going in and saying, I don't like this, but going in and saying, this is really not okay for me. However, this is a few options of what could happen, you know, I think is so effective. And again, it takes the blame, kind of breaks that barrier a little bit where and you know, people aren't quite as much on the defensive, hopefully, if you approach it that way. And then also thinking later on down the career chain, you know, a lot of dancers, because we've been groomed not to speak up, because we've been told to, you know, be seen and not heard, most people, I think, find it very difficult to negotiate contracts when they're in the process of getting hired. You know, I know for me, it was like, oh, you want to give me a contract? Great. Excellent. Where do I sign? Like, there was no second thought. There was no, well, wait a minute. You know, this point shoe stipend, I don't know about this. Or, you know, what about my health benefits? You know, and if you're starting to model this behavior for and advocate for your child at a young age, they're just going to learn those skills naturally. And later on in life, be able to have a happy, fulfilling career because they feel and are in control of that career and in control of their bodies. So, oh, so exciting.
Well, and that's my hope for this younger generation, for the Gen Zers as they grow up. You know, my daughters are Gen Zers and I see them having more independence and empowerment just because of the society that they live in. And I hope that what I'm modeling and talking through with my dancers will make them feel that, yes, I am worth it. And yes, I am able to move forward. One of my dancers is 16 and she told me recently that her dance teacher was giving her a correction in class. And she's very, the dance teacher is very old school. And she said, you know, your legs just look like smushy cotton balls. And she said to the teacher, that is body shaming and that's not okay. But if you have a correction to make my rendezvous look better, I would love to hear it.
Nice. I love it.
And if it had been me, I would have been like, I guess they do kind of look like cotton balls.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, I love that. I love that so much. That's wonderful.
So they are, I think, feeling more empowered, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah, that is great. So before I let you go, I've got a couple of fun questions for you.
Yes.
I'm going to put you in my time machine and I'm going to send you back to around 15, 14 year old Jennifer. And I'd love to hear what advice you would give to yourself as a young dancer.
Well, my friend Josephine Lee has said that she firmly believes that we grow up to be the adult that we needed in our own lives. And, I love that thought. And I love feeling like I could be that for other kids. And so I would have loved to hear the encouragement that I hand out to my young dancers. And I feel very strongly that that's part of my job is to do that. I was very fearful of being imperfect. So I tell people that it's okay to be imperfect, that messy imperfection is what I expect in a dance class. And in the mess is where the magic happens.
Yeah.
And if you can't try a double Andior attitude pirouette in class, where can you try it? Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's try it. Let's see what happens. You might actually make it. So I tell them not to fear themselves because they are wonderfully made. I tell them that, and any of my dancers listening, you'll be like, oh, I've heard this before. I really do. I feel so strongly in saying these things. I tell them that nobody else in the entire world has to offer what they have to offer and that they have something to say that the rest of the world needs to hear and that no one on earth can say it the way that they can say it. I tell them that that when they get on stage, they have nothing to prove and only something to offer. And that's what I would love to have heard when I was a younger dancer.
Oh, nothing to prove, but everything to offer.
Yep.
Oh, I love that. I mean, I feel like I can apply that in my own life post many years post dance career, you know, going into any situation, you know, where you, you might feel extra pressure to perform, whatever that means to you, that you have nothing to prove, but everything to offer. That's, that's really cool.
Thank
you. That's a great one. All right. Last one. I'm going to give you a magic wand and I'm going to let you wave it. However, you can only change one thing about the ballet world. What would it be?
Okay. Well, I'm probably cheating because I feel like this would have a domino effect, but I would remove the habit that the ballet world has of handing down tradition unthinkingly, of just saying this is the way it's always been, so this is the way it will be, of our near reverence and almost worship of the customs and mores of the ballet world. And I would say, let's start asking why more, right? Let's look at what's happening here. And I use the metaphor of the ballet world being like this beautiful old landmarked building and some natural disaster has come and ruined it. And we have to rebuild that building. Do we rebuild it exactly the same? Or do we bring the wiring up to code? Do we say that's stupid that there's this tiny room here? Let's fix that flow and make it better. Yeah. So taking COVID and taking the pandemic and saying, let's look at the ballet world and not keep it the way that it has been. There's a better way of doing things. And let's not, there's a difference between something that's a tradition and something that's a habit. And we say things because our teachers said them. And I find myself saying them going, wait, why did I just say that?
Yes. Me
Why?
Too. Yeah, absolutely.
So looking and saying, this is a tradition. Is it a tradition worth honoring, right? Mm. The tradition of only casting a certain type of person in a certain type of role, is that worth honoring? Or is there a better way to do that? So I would, my magic wand would take away that unquestioning allegiance to continuing the perfect tradition and keeping it in amber and say, let's let it grow and be something even better and more amazing because more people will be in it and it's going to be healthier and it's going to be beautiful and it's going to honor ballet even more than keeping it frozen would have.
It's a living, breathing art form.
Yep.
That's the only way it's going to continue.
Yep, it is.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. Beautifully put. Well, Jennifer, this has been just a real treat. Again, I'm just so grateful for the work that you're doing in the world, the humans you're putting out into the world. You're doing a wonderful job, and we're all so grateful for the work that you do. Before I let you go, I would love for you to tell us how to connect with you. If you've got any special events, your website, your socials, all the places where we can follow you. And
Yes. So you can find me on Instagram at Jennifer.Milner, M-I-L-N-E-R. That's a great place to find me. I'll answer any DMs and you know, hook up with anyone who wants to chat there. My website is also Jennifer-Milner.com. So you can find me on my website. There's a form there to submit comments or questions, and we can chat through email that way as well. I'm really excited about a workshop that's coming up that is going to be coming up in February. I'm partnering with Mining the Gap.
Yay, they're our sponsor.
Yay, sponsor. We are working to put out a workshop for dance teachers and educators and studio owners to sort of bring mental health issues into the studio and ways that teachers can support them appropriately. So we're bringing in eating disorder experts to talk about the importance of words. We're talking about how to spot anxiety or depression in a dancer and sort of what you can do about it, how to support dancers through through injury in the studio in a healthy way. So it's going to be a really exciting series. You can go to Mining the Gap. I think it's wearemindingthegap.org.
Yep.
You got to find out more about that. And then finally, I also do a podcast on Bendy Bodies. It's a podcast about hypermobility for dancers and other athletic artists. We address mental health issues there as well. And that's at Bendy_bodies on Instagram. You can find me there.
I've been following you forever. So yes, I love your podcast. And guys, I will put all the links to all the things in the show notes so that you can go there and easily click through everything and get all of those great resources.
Yay.
All right. Well, again, Jennifer, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a true pleasure. And I know I'll probably be picking your brain again sometime soon.
You are very welcome. Thank you so much for letting me talk about this subject that I am so passionate about. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, I just love Jennifer so much. I mean, I've been listening to her podcast forever and definitely following her on Instagram too. So I was kind of familiar with her messaging, but I found so many things that were just fascinating in this conversation today and also useful. I think one of the biggest takeaways for the whole parenting piece that works for her is that she said that you need to give kids space to say, I need to skip class, or I need a mental health day, and allow them the space so that they can say that and feel good about it and not shamed or shameful about it. And I think this is, you know, something that our dance teachers, our studio owners, our artistic directors, choreographers can also really take to heart and bring into the studio to make a safer space for their dancers, no matter how old they are. Because let's face it, if your dancer is not in a good mental health space, then they are, like we learned in my last episode, more open for injury possibility. They are not going to have as much energy. You're not going to get out of them what you need out of them. And chances are, on performance day, they're going to be way better off than if they had pushed themselves through a time where, you know, things were not great. So I think that was a really, really important point that she made. From the coaching perspective, I said this before, but I love, love, love the image of a dancer being a race car, because we are fine-tuned machines that produce art. But, you know, thinking about your career through the long run, peaking at 45, not 14, and understanding that if you have to sit out a competition or a specific performance, there's going to be more. It's just a fraction of your career. And if you have that pit crew, you've got the physio or PT, you've got the massage therapist, you've got your nutritionist, you have your sports psychologist, you have your coach, you have your teacher. You know, you have all of these people who are rooting you on, who are there for you to make sure that every aspect of your body and mind are in tip-top shape for performance. I mean, how incredible would that be if all of our dancers had access to that? Also, her communication plan. Oh my goodness. I mean, coming to someone in leadership with a problem is something that everyone should feel comfortable doing. However, it's all in kind of how you present it too, because you never want the other person to automatically go on the defense. So she talked a lot about making sure that you have a solution in mind when you come to someone with a problem. So what is it specifically that you want out of the conversation? And that turns a complaint into an actionable opportunity for improvement. And that's what we want to have. Because even though what's happening may be wrong, absolutely wrong, and frustrating and emotional, the only way to really resolve that conflict is to come into the situation with options. And I think it's really important too to point out that she also said you have to have a plan B, and maybe some cases a C and a D, but also be committed to those secondary plans. Because if plan A doesn't work out and the environment isn't going to change, then you have to be willing to walk away and try out plan B. Because like we said, our kids' health and safety are our number one priority. Advocating for our children is our number one priority. The things that they go through now will affect them for the rest of their lives. and modeling that behavior to your kid about making the right choices for them and making a plan B and sticking to it is only going to help them in the long run as human beings, let alone dancers. So I personally really loved that perspective that she had. And I know not everything works for everybody, of course, but I really took that to heart and really, really loved the way that she explained everything. So it was such a lovely episode. And again, very timely for me as I start to enter this next season of my life. Well, I hope that you guys enjoyed the episode. I know that I really did. I really appreciate you listening today. If you could, please go ahead and leave me a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, follow the pod on Spotify, and share it with just 3 friends to spread the word. And if you have any questions, particular topics you'd like me to cover, or guests you'd like to hear from, you can email those to me at dancebetterpodcast@gmail.com. And of course, you can always follow the show on Instagram and send me a DM at dancebetterpodcast. And just as a quick reminder, the link in the bio for Dance Better Podcast, you'll also find all of the Psychology Today and Mental Health America, all the links there for you to connect with mental health resources if you live in the United States. And if you have other resources that you would like me to link in the bio for people who live outside the United States, please send those over to me and I will be happy to pop those in for everyone to be able to have. Well, thank you again, guys, for listening today. And I can't wait to learn with you on the next episode. Bye.